when you think about domestic abuse, which, by the way, has gone up dramatically during the pandemic, again, one of these silent consequences, what you often hear, and my wife and I have supported some great causes to help women, mainly women, almost always, who are leaving their home because of abuse. And they have to sneak out. And they're taking their kids and they need a place to go. And they go to a shelter and they try to find some safety from their abuser. But there's a new program, a pilot program, and it's the first of its kind in Canada, that kind of reverse engineers this. And I'd never heard about this. It's called Safe at Home. And what it means is the woman and the kids stay at home and the abuser goes to a shelter. That's right. The man goes to a shelter to take stock about why they're abusing, why they're practicing this kind of horrific abuse. Helping the abuser? I wanted to understand that. So we're joined now by Danielle Murdoch, who's the chair and the board of directors of Rowan House in High River, Alberta, which is Danielle here, and which is the pilot project. Danielle, great to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Can you explain what the concept here is of Rowan House?
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. So Rowan House is, as you said, a not-for-profit in High River, and we offer several facets: crisis intervention, long-term support, and preventative education, designed to break the cycle of domestic abuse in our communities. And within that model, we offer a traditional emergency shelter, which would provide a place to go for women in crisis. But we were constantly being challenged to do something different by these women because we were seeing behavior being repeated by these men. So we were being asked by the women, what can we do differently? And this was where Safe at Home was born. Safe at Home is an alternative approach to helping these families experiencing domestic abuse. As you said, traditionally, the women and children would flee the home to the safety of our shelters. And with Safe at Home, the women and children maintain the stability by staying in the home with their support networks. The children in their schools, the women can stay at their job, and they receive outreach support from Rowan House and other community partners. And then the man will enter our 52-week program. 8 weeks of that is in our transitional housing, which is provided by Safe at Home. And then during this time, the man will work toward accepting responsibility for his behavior and developing the skills to self-intervene in this abusive behavior and learn how to build healthy relationships going forward. And then so, after the initial... After the initial 8 weeks within the transitional home, the man is then either, depending on his circumstance, he's either reunited with his family or he's moved on going to his own housing. But the treatment doesn't end there. For the balance of the 52 weeks, he is provided with community-based services and support through Rowan House and community partners.
So let me ask you, how does this work? Because how do you convince someone who's abusing their wife or their partner, oh, you should seek treatment? Like, they're abusers. How do you get them to even check in?
They have to be wanting to change. This is a voluntary program. It's not a program where it's forced or mandated by the court. This is not a program where we're taking people that are forced to do so by the courts. This is a strictly voluntary program. So right now, since we have launched the program on March 1st, we received applicants on the first day. And we're assessing those applicants, and there's a very rigorous program to assess them for risk parameters. So it is strictly voluntary. It has to be for the abuser that is ready to make a change.
So is that person still a, so that's, I think, where a lot of people are baffled. Like, so someone's abusing their partner, their spouse, and what? They're like, I just can't stop it. Or like they feel ashamed of it. And then they check in. I mean, is that's, that seems, I mean, I guess that was what we all want, but I mean, how often is that going to happen?
It does happen. There are individuals that have been through this cycle before. They're working their way, you know, they've been through issues. They've had repeated police contact. They're at the point where their spouse says, I'm going to leave if you don't get help. And basically it's at the point where police have had involvement with the family, and they are at the point where there might be the point where the family is going to break down, and he says, okay, look, I'm ready to address this issue. I'm ready to get help. Let's not split up. Let me try and work through this program. Where do I go for help? But there haven't been resources available for men. And that's what we're trying to address here with this program, because there aren't resources for men. There
right.
really aren't.
So how many men are participating in this right now?
Right now, we're screening two men that have come forward. We've just launched the program. So we are in the screening process for two. And so we hope to have them up and running shortly. Two is our maximum capacity on the transition, on the transitional housing. So right now we don't have anybody physically checked into the program, but we are pre-screening two candidates.
And were you like, how bad, I mean, will someone who's, I mean, I'm just trying to calibrate who gets into this thing. Like, how, if someone's badly abused someone, you would still take them in if they say, I'm ready?
Yeah, there are risk parameters. And again, there is a whole guideline that they have to be assessed. We cannot take super high risk offenders for the safety of our staff, of course, which is first and foremost. We have to be aware of that. So there are risk parameters that have to be followed. So we do have a pre-screening that has to be followed.
But if someone says, I'm abusing someone, shouldn't some, like, what about, don't the police say, well, you've beaten someone or you've abused someone? Shouldn't there be criminal? What about charges?
It depends. If they have been charged, sometimes there are people, there are some individuals that have been charged that we will take into the program. It comes down to the risk assessment.
Right. Are some people saying, why don't we just spend money on helping the women, the victims, not the perpetrators of the crime?
We do have our full program through the shelter that we do help the women. And it's important to know that this was a pilot project through the government, funded by the federal government. So we have separate funding for this. It was a 4-year pilot project. We got specific funding from the federal government to do this particular project. So it does not come out of our regular fundraising dollars.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. That, well, listen, it's a fascinating program, Danelle. Thank you so much for joining us and talking about Rowan House in High River, Alberta. Danelle Murdoch, Chair of the Board of Directors. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and thank you for taking the time to bring this issue to light.
I really appreciate it. So we just interviewed someone from Rowan's House in Alberta. Now, this is interesting. In High River, Alberta, Danelle Murdoch, who's the chair of the board of directors, this is a new domestic violence shelter. And what it does, it says, if you are an abuser, we will help you. So the partner who's abused, it's almost always women. By the vast majority, and the kids, they stay home, and the abuser goes to the safe house. I've asked you if you think it's a good idea. Like, they have to agree to go, because how do they go if they're an abuser? Do you think this program is a good idea? 1-855-633-1010 or 71010. Now, I'm getting a lot of text saying, Evan, I can't believe what you're saying. I just want, people will say this to me. Why are you assuming abusers are men, Evan? Women are abusers too. Okay, so I'm going to just answer that before, because I don't want someone to call and I'm going to go through this. This is called in the law intimate partner violence, okay? And I'm going to give you the facts from Statistics Canada. This is the facts, okay? Women are by far the bigger victims of this, okay? I'm going to give you the actual facts of intimate partner violence. It's about 30% of all incidents of violent crime. This is from 2018. There was close to 100,000 people who experienced it, according to police. That's only the reported. 80% are women. 80%. So 20% men, 80% women. Okay? Police reported intimate partner violence in 2018 were 4 times higher for women than for men. Okay? It's usually women between the age of 25 and 34. In rural areas, it's higher. I just want you to know these stats. Right? And it's a big deal. Police reported data show that rates of intimate partner sexual assault 30 times higher for women than for men. Okay, so that's why I say it's about women. Because the vast majority is. So I know that a lot of you are going to text like it's some bias. Just follow the data. I'm not making this stuff up. That's Stats Canada. Now, I'm getting a lot of this. Like Jim. Evan, I support any program which allows the kids to stay at home. This program is brilliant, in my opinion. And I'm getting sort of a 50-50. Some like it, some don't. Let's take some calls. Who do I have here? Dan. Do I have Dan on the phone here? Is that the one I've got? Dan.
Yes. Hi, Evan. Hi, Mr. Sullivan.
How you call me, Evan? You can call my dad, Mr. Sullivan.
Long-time listener, first-time caller, as they say. Now, to make my point very, very short and brief, I think it's an excellent program. I think it's long overdue. I think it looks at both sides in the most safe possible way. First of all, the kids are protected. They don't have to change their daily routine. They are in a safe environment. They can go on with their daily lives, as well as the mother or whoever is the abused person and stays home with them. On the other hand, the abuser does not have access to perpetuate his abuse continuously. Secondly, he's not necessarily in the street. He can still go and work and make right. money in order to support the family, and eventually, you know, he doesn't end up as a beggar in the street.
So, Dan, I got a lot of calls I want to get to, but hey, first of all, welcome to the program, and I think you've made a great contribution. I really appreciate that. I've got calls lined up that I really want to get to them, but thank you for that call, and I'll read some text, and then I'll get to Andrew in a second. But I want to read a text from someone who has experienced abuse that has, Evan, how unfamiliar, however refreshing, to hear your voice when you were talking to the guest about abusive men. It's just part of my life. Windsor, where I live, was no help for these men, but it would make a lot of women's lives easier if we had a service like this. Even 30 years after being abused, I have to sit at my daughter's house and try to be civil to my ex, or I don't see my grandchildren because he lives with her. Man. The long shadow of abuse never stops. So there's a lot of people that really like this. Evan, I think this project is a great approach to helping end domestic violence. Taking the women and children away to a shelter doesn't end the problem. The man will just rope in another victim. Why should the women and children have to live somewhere else? It's punishing the victims. The thing is, and I agree with that, but Dan in Mississauga makes a really powerful point, which I asked Danelle about. Most abusers will deny they're an abuser. How does the woman convince her abuser he needs to get out without getting abused again? Dan makes a great point, and I think that's powerful, Dan. I agree with you. Andrew, you're on the line. What's your take on this?
Yeah, how you doing, Evan? I think any program that tries to change the narrative a little bit and tries to look at things from a different point of view is good. And this is to my point. You said you didn't want to go down this hole, but you quoted StatCan stats. Well, in the United States, they reckon the CDC, which isn't some biased think tank, has said that 1 in 5 or 1 in 7 men report having experienced severe physical violence. Here's my point. We need to stop looking at a lot of these issues through a gender lens and start looking at them through a human lens. I use an example of teen suicide. Boys are far more likely to commit suicide than girls. Would we look at that through a gender lens necessarily, or we would look at that through a fulsome lens and consider all the victims and say, listen, you matter. You matter in this discussion as well. And look for a solution that's going to work for everybody. Because there are men out there that are being abused, and they have no...
Yeah, but I said that. There are 20% of the domestic abuse is men, so that's not insignificant. By the way, Center for Disease Control in the United States talks about intimate partners sexual violence. 1 in 4 women, 1 in 10 men have experienced it. That's their data that I'm looking at right now. But listen, you're not wrong. I just think we'd be crazy not to look at it through a gender-based lens, because 8 out of 10 of the people who are abused are women. So, like, the vast majority doesn't mean we're ignoring the men or we're ignoring that issue. But, you know, if I told you 8 out of your 10 customers want X and 2 of your 10 want Y, you would probably have a special focus on the 8 out of 10. Because not that you would ignore your other two, but you'd have to go to where the vast majority of the issue exists. And that's why I think this is... I actually have no problem looking at it through a gender-based, because it's happening to women. Do I have Charles on the line for the last one? Charles, go ahead,
sir. Yeah, hi. My question is, this program... How do you know that the gentleman, I quote-unquote, will not get fed up with the program, go home, because he knows automatically where he used to live, and beat the living crap out of his wife and kids, yeah. And, you know, it's back to square one. There's no
Could
protection.
Happen. Could happen. You're right. And but I guess the point is, and look, I'm learning about this, so I'm not trying to defend it in the sense that I, you know, it's not like my area of expertise. I just had the expert on, Danelle, but... I will say the answer is that if an abuser enrolls in this program, it's because they want to enroll in it. And it's obviously, I'm with you, the idea how to get them there.
Yeah, but
are they sincere? That's the issue.
Enroll in the program. You may just get fed up with the program and decide to go home and cause havoc. Why not put an electronic collar around his neck, and when he comes near the house, it zaps him with an electric current?
I guess so. That's one kind of justice. I don't think you can zap people with electric currents like that, but our justice system doesn't work like that, but I appreciate the call. And do you really want the justice system to be zapping people and doing that, like treating them like a dog? But look. Domestic abuse costs about $7 billion a year. So not just the human cost, but in pain, suffering, medical costs. This is a terrible scourge morally. And I do think keeping the women and the children vastly in the house, the abused, is smarter. There's a lot of women listening to our program across this beautiful country of ours. And I got a bunch of texts of people who said, I'm sitting in my parking lot crying because people don't believe that women are the more abused. And one of those people is on the line now, and her name is Joy. And I want to bring her on the program. You can call me on all this. Joy, first of all, thanks for listening into the program. And you know, we always listen, and we always take care of every one of our beautiful listeners out there. That struck you, that conversation about abuse, didn't it?
Yeah, it really did. Thank you for giving me this chance to say a few things about it. Can you hear me okay?
I got you, Joy. I got you. What's up?
I'm going to give you a little bit of a different swing on this, because even when some people find out that this is going on, Evan, they don't want to have anybody do anything about it. God bless my mom and dad, but I remember going to my dad and my mom, and I remember them saying, really old school, well, you made your bed, you're going to have to lie in it.
Like, sorry, Joy, I just wanted context. You're saying you were being abused, Joy? Your partner was abusing you, and you told your dad? And your dad said, you made your bed, you got to lie in it?
Yeah, and it went a long time because I took it upon myself to change the situation because I was afraid my kids might get hurt. And after we'd been separated for a while, I remember seeing him actually shake this guy's hand at some occasion, and it made me feel like I really wasn't worth too much. And I've lived with that feeling for a while, but I'm married to a wonderful man now. But like I said,
I just slow down here. You're telling me you told your father you were getting abused. Your father didn't do anything about it. You were obviously afraid for the safety of yourself and your kids. And then you watched your dad shake the hand of the person that beat you, essentially. And that just made you just felt worthless.
Like, as if it was all over and okay, and he hadn't seen him, and he shook his hand, and I'll never forget that feeling.
I'm sorry for that. That is a brutal sense of betrayal. That's what it is. It's a betrayal.
Yeah, and this program that this woman talked about, we really need this, because the Al-Anon meetings around are full of women telling these stories. But the men have nowhere to go. We have an anger management meeting. I think one that you can go to in Windsor. And that just takes care of it. It band-aids the problem. So I really give her kudos. But like I said to you, was it ever nice to hear your voice, that it was strange to you to hear the statistics and the way some people are living their whole lives, like you say, in a shadow, because that means you are one hell of a nice guy, that your family has never, ever had to deal with this. And my husband listens to this stuff on TV all the time, and I say, boy, another woman got killed. All these, movies about women, and they've tried to find the killer for years. I don't see that as being 50-50 with women and men. It's that the women can't get away because they're told, if you leave, I'll kill you and the kids.
Joy, I got to tell you, first of all, I appreciate the call. And I want all our listeners to know, like, we have a lot of conversations here about a lot of heavy topics. You know, we have light topics. We laugh, we fight, we debate, we agree, we confess. And we give a crap, and we're listening, and we're all learning. And we, the only way we're going to learn a little, or change your minds a bit, or figure this crazy life out, is if we listen. And Joy, we're listening, and you got a voice here, my friend. And thank you. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it, Joy. You take care, and I'm glad you're on the right road, and that you've got that sense of self and value back. That's good. So that's Joy giving us a call.